This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 19th of January, 2010, and joining me again today is my good friend and the regular guest on this program, Greg Nicoletos. Greg is the founder of the world's first global anti-transhumanist movement, and he can be found at WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped.com. Greg, great to have you back on. Thanks for being here.
Much appreciated. Thanks, James. Always a pleasure to be on.
All right. Well, as usual, there are a million things that we can talk about in regards to this Orwellian technocratic enslavement grid that's going up all around us. But I know you have your ears to the ground and your finger on the pulse of all the news stories and articles and trade publications and all the other sources of media of information on this subject. So tonight, let's start by getting a little bit of a news update about stories that you're tracking right now or anything you think might be of significance to the listeners.
Probably, I mean, on the very chip side, there's been actually a lot of movement. We probably are covering about 35 news articles per day. So there's huge developments in augmented reality, which is, a sort of virtual reality that's obviously coming along the line. And there's a lot of news stories as well, obviously, on electronic health records, the global grid, smart grid technology as well. So just for your listeners, I guess we can get a VeriChip because this company just keeps changing its name, basically. So I'd like to take credit that they've changed their name because we had the No VeriChip Inside campaign, and VeriChip is no longer called VeriChip. They're actually called Positive ID. So if we throw the word positive in there, it might make an implantable chip more palatable to the actual audience. So,
right.
And also they've spun off the human or the actual animal health division as well. So, it's really the same company. What they've basically done is just repackaged, their name into another name. They've basically added some more services to the actual product. But basically, the company is still forging, the path to basically microchip the entire populace.
Right.
The major area which, I guess I'd like to touch on, which is which ties into the financial sector, is VeriChip, and we will continue to call them VeriChip because we have a new marketing campaign coming out, which is called VeriChip is not positive. So. So it ties into the whole Positive ID name that they have. But for the listeners out there, they've actually acquired a company called the National Credit Report. And what that basically does, that obviously links your credit score, especially in America with, credit being so important, that you can actually start seeing the synergy of, the VeriChip, which has obviously got VeriPay on it as well, to basically become not only a chip that can actually do financial transactions, but can also report on your credit as well. And they have also merged with another company called SteelVault. And then what SteelVault basically is an identity theft prevention company. Now, Scott Silverman, who is, the CEO, he's basically gone on record to say that, look, yes, we have acquired, a credit monitoring company. Yes, we have acquired an identity theft prevention company in SteelVault, but VeriChip will not create synergies between those companies. And, I mean, that is just plainly ridiculous. It is like Google basically, acquiring, an advertising company and saying, look, we will not be using, the particular services that we have purchased or the user base or the... regardless of what, if one acquires a company, the reason one acquires a company is basically to create synergy for your company. So the one thing that, I respect about Scott Silverman as the CEO of VeriChip, he is probably the most consistent lying CEO you will find out there. And thumbs up, Scott, seriously, you are a piece of work.
Excellent. Ringing endorsement. Well, as we know, the companies don't change their name if everything's going according to plan. So just like Blackwater, we have Verichip running away from its own name, which has got to be a sign of something. But I guess what you're saying is basically we're seeing Verichip positioning itself to create something sort of much bigger than just the basic technology, something that'll tie this in a number of different ways.
Absolutely. And look, what I see happening with Verichip is basically it's offering, let's say, for example, you know, you offer six services to the actual product. Sooner or later, what you'll find, the synergy will be created by, hypothetically, let's say there's another company out there that is actually owned or seed funded by the same multinational companies, whether you look at it's HP or IBM and the like. And what I predict will happen, you will basically have a merger occurring, right? So this could happen from the health sector. This could basically happen from the pharmaceutical sector as well, from the big pharma giants, because what you'll find is now as Verichip is basically moving to release the glucose sensing microchip, you are seeing a big push. And there was one particular document that came out from Forbes, which was that diabetes is basically killing the U.S. economy. And the figures that were basically quoting, you know, it's, you know, the, you know, cost of diabetes is basically $116 billion a year, I think it was, and it's going to go in excess of $300 billion. But as I actually read through the article, it became very clear that, you know, Verichip was very much in bed with the Forbes writer. So what we need to see what is happening or coming down the line with this Obamacare and the move to electronic health records, Verichip is going to be propped up regardless, because what will happen is you will have, let's say, the Department of Defense, which basically has the MyCare product, program coming through, which is called, you know, MyCare for Military Care. And if you basically go ahead and create health records for, you know, the military, and then hypothetically speaking, let's say you have X amount of the military have diabetes, and then Verichip basically offers their product, whether it's free of charge or there's an underhand deal that occurs, Verichip is very much riding the wave and the funding that has actually been given by Obama to basically take analog records into the digital spectrum. So, you know, even though we feel as though, you know, we're making very good inroads in alerting the average Joe out there in regards to microchipping technology, I can say that Verichip continues to spin, you know, new sectors, new markets, new applications, but at the same time, the CEO just continues to lie. He just continues to go into market and, you know, saying things like, you know, we don't want to microchip children, we don't want to microchip, you know, immigrants. And then you can just go onto YouTube and Google Scott Silverman basically saying, you know, we want to microchip immigrants. This could be a solution for children, especially when we have the personal location device. So the fact is, how Scott Silverman and Verichip go into market, they're very much going to market with the approach that the average populace is dumbed down, has zero attention span, and no one is actually taking heed of how this company is going into market and actually monitoring it from a perspective of, you know, trust is earned. Well, let's look at the pedigree of Verichip. And if it's, you know, at best, it's a mongrel dog.
That's right, and we should get into that pedigree a little bit. But I guess my take on what they're doing here and the way they're trying to construct the companies, it seems to me like they're trying to position themselves in these different markets and industries and spin-offs in a way that they'll make the Verichip sort of a one-stop shop for a number of different things, from your financial transactions to your credit score to your health records. So Instead of drawing people into it through its functionality, I would imagine the simplest way to institute this as a market phenomenon would be to have it government imposed. So whether that's through legislation for immigrants and that sort of thing introduced gradually into the population, and then through who knows what kind of incident staged or manufactured or exploited in the future, then mandated into everyone. It seems to me like it's just being sort of built up at the moment, but I'm not sure it's ready for full implementation.
Yeah, and look, what you brought up is key, James, because I think it was probably about in the last month, Verichip basically announced that they had, you know, a new company, which is basically called Gibraltar, which is, you know, taking over their media relations and corporate communications. So I did a bit of research on Gibraltar, and guess what? We found out that they've got excellent inroads with, you know, the Clinton administration. They have expertise in biotech, in the pharmaceutical world, energy, including the nuclear. So basically, you know, a company, a marketing media relations company, call them what you want. I just really call them a company with connections that has a Washington office as well. So, you know, you only have to scratch through the surface to see it really has nothing to do with Verichip, the product. It really has to do with what this game is really about. And the deals that are struck, like let's say a person has a normal business, in that particular world, you have to go out basically, you know, woo your client, close the deal, and actually offer something. Verichip is a case of it is a company that has basically been propped up by IBM. It continues to hemorrhage. It continues to bleed. Yet it continues to make new acquisitions, continues to survive in the market, gets delisted from the NASDAQ. The product itself has been proven to cause cancer, yet it just continues to, you know, be like a 10-trick pony, basically. So I do see that, like you said, there will be a big implementation with, obviously, you know, the Obamacare, and there was a deal recently struck with a company called Avocare, and now Avocare underneath their umbrella, I guess, you've basically got you have, you know, major institutions such as the Blue Cross, Blue Shield, I think there's Cigna as well. So if, for example, that particular, deal goes through, which it is because they are collaborating together, Verichip has gone on record to say that, you know, they have got up to 1 million patients. So what we need to do as well on this side, which, you know, I haven't had the time to do, is we'll be doing more research on Avocare. And then sooner or later, there'll be an alert will sound like, I mean, hypothetically, let's say, you know, we go do some research on Avocare, and then all of a sudden you find, okay, well, you know, the majority shares of this particular institution are owned by IBM, hypothetically, let's say that's the truth. And that's what I see will happen. You will basically have this company being taken into market, and it will appear as though it has succeeded, you know, if one looked at it from the normal financial, you know, lens, but realistically it will be propped up into position through dodgy deals, you know, and at the end of the day, just to position this company with where the, whether you want to call it the global elite or the agenda to basically microchip the populace, it will be propped up for no other reason than they want to prop it up.
Right. Well, I guess that begs the question, who is propping it up? And perhaps that goes back to the idea of the pedigree of this company and the mongrel beast that it is.
Yeah. And look, one need look no further, basically, than, you know, than IBM. So you really have IBM seed funding the company, as we've obviously discussed many times. And then Raytheon, who basically manufactures the actual microchip. Now, one thing I would like to bring up with your listeners as well, and I would truly appreciate if we could actually, you know, do a bit of a grassroots campaign. We've actually been trying to get onto the Glenn Beck show, and you know, Glenn Beck being such a patriot that he is, I've emailed him, I think it is 4 times, and including his show producer Stuart. And what is funny though is, you know, he is a supposed Christian man, and when Verichip basically wants to come onto his program to actually discuss, you know, the new features and the new featured Verichip in October, I think it was last year, Glenn Beck just basically, you know, accepts the invitation and tells his audience of patriots, you know, all the people that watch Fox News, that, you know, this is, you know, there's a bit of concern with this product, but realistically, you know, it's, you know, it is not something to be truly concerned about. But, you know, you go back one step and then you start researching what, you know, Scott Silverman said, and he has gone on record to say that, you know, to take this product into the world market, they will need a much larger company than themselves to basically for the product to end up in Walmart. So, I mean, when the CEO says, you know, we want this product, you know, to end up in Walmart in a roundabout fashion, I can tell you, Scott Silverman goes to bed, and this is a man who likes his yachts. Scott Silverman goes to bed at night, and he wants everyone in this world microchipped, from your children all the way to Alzheimer patients who can't make up their own decision, all the way to your pets and to your cats and to your dogs, basically leaving no man unturned, if you like, or women.
Right, that's because he cares about everyone and wants to make sure they're all safe
it's
and protected.
It's all about being positive, James. Positive.
Exactly. Well, okay. Well, let's start to get a handle on what it is that we're really facing here. So, what are we if we imagine a future world of full implementation of this VeriChip technology and the various synergistic companies that it's being wedded to, what kind of things would someone experience in their day-to-day life that would be ultimately affected by this technology?
In what regards, James?
Well, I'm thinking, as you go about your day, how would it be used? How could it be abused and misused? And what sorts of things would actually change about our society if we went to an implementation?
I think there will be a major division. I mean, what I see is the diabetes market will be very much attacked in a sense. So what we need to understand is the diabetes or the insulin market, whichever way you look at it, you know, with the manufacturers of, you know, and just focusing on that, which is I see it as this is how the product will actually permeate into society. If we just looked at that, for example, and, you know, with the manufacturers of insulin, you've got, you know, companies like Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly and obviously, you know, other, you know, pharmaceutical giants that actually manufacture insulin. Hypothetically speaking, let's say they, you know, came up with a plan to basically, you know, inject the microchip into, you know, diabetes patients, hypothetically. As soon as that occurs, I believe there will be this massive splintering that occurs in society. And from that point, you basically, I mean, where the long-term, the goal of VeriChip is that you basically, you know, have the chip in you. You can be sitting on your couch, you know, via a wireless network and checking your blood glucose levels as you're consuming Wendy's and eating chips. And where this is heading, James, realistically, you'll have in vivo, insulin delivery systems. So, you know, all you need is a synergy of you have this guy on the couch, he's got his in vivo delivery system of insulin, continues to eat all the junk food he wants, but, you know, the insulin just keeps pumping and pumping and pumping, regulating his blood sugar levels. So he's quite happy as he sits on his couch, basically abusing his body. The pharmaceutical industry gains, VeriChip gains, and at the same time, you know, has humanity gained. That's the whole point. So to answer your question, to go back, I believe when VeriChip starts actually microchipping, you know, millions of people, our work will be a lot harder, because you will then have that particular camp will then be saying, what, are you going to deny us the ability, or, you know, the capacity to actually monitor our glucose levels without actually pricking our fingers? Are you – so the market will actually swing in a sense – to VeriChip, and we will have less of a position than what we have now. So for us, it's very much to have a preemptive strike and just try get, you know, whether it's preventative legislation in place now, or at least have, you know, people within positions of power actually aware of this and seeing where the slippery slope basically goes.
Well, you raise a very good point there, because of course the diabetes market, as it were, is exploding, absolutely exploding, as the food supply continues to be junked up, and more and more processed foods are being forced down people's throats. And diabetes, of course, is exploding across the developed world. And now I guess there is going to be a more and more of a market for that. And as soon as the implementation can happen in that sort of sense, then yes, we would have a big divide with a large contingent of people demanding the technology, which, of course, is always the way that this type of technology is going to be brought in. It's not going to be forced on people so much as it will be actively desired by a certain segment of society. So That's a very interesting analysis. Well, let's think a little bit about financial transactions. You mentioned before about the paying through your VeriChip and credit histories and scores and things. Yes. On your VeriChip. So what are some ways that will be affected in that sense?
Look, I see there will be two major. The one that I'm worried about the most, realistically, is the Apple iPhone, which will be shipping with what seems to be a radio frequency ID chip for contactless purchasing. So what you'll find is there'll obviously be an app and the iPhone. And look, I've worked for Apple. If it's one company that can basically, sexualize products and truly understands user interfaces and, to basically make the product easy to use from, all the way from children all the way to the older demographic, I truly fear the radio frequency ID iPhone, because when you basically have a product that is truly desired by teenagers, people that basically are looking for that hip element. And look, I have an iPhone myself, so like I said, I truly like technology, but I am seeing it now getting to a point where when iPhone does release that product with the radio frequency ID, that is when I stop purchasing the product. So to answer your question, James, the actual purchasing system, VeriChip does have VeriPay. So it all comes back to, a radio frequency ID device. But what really has to happen is this push, and we're seeing it across the board, this push to eliminate cash. People who use cash are terrorists. Why do you want to pay in cash? Well, so this whole point, and what will happen is in this world where, time is of the essence and everyone wants to, get to their car faster and beat that line, convenience trumps intelligence many times. It's it amazes me what people will sign away to save 20 seconds in a line. It just boggles my brain.
Right. So you're thinking that in terms of implementation, it's probably going to come from the outside first, and it'll be in things like our iPhone, and then eventually it will be on the VeriChip.
Yes.
or people who already have the VeriChip for their diabetes will suddenly discover, oh, well, now I can pay for things with my VeriChip.
Correct. And look, this is the point. There is a synergy that is occurring from all the multinational companies. So, you'll have Hewlett-Packard, you'll have Sony. So they are all working towards this global agenda. So, so to answer your question, it's not so much VeriChip that will actually introduce, contactless pay. It will really come from a company that is basically cool, accepted, and it's really Apple that I think will bring the actual radio frequency ID contactless pay to market, basically.
Absolutely. Well, before we go any further, you've already mentioned a couple of grassroots campaigns that you're thinking about or kicking off. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, we actually we have a new film released, which is called Avatar, which is the review of the actual the video, and we've actually got climategate.tv promoted in there as well, James, so it's all good.
Awesome.
We're approaching Australian government quite aggressively this year, and we've actually have one particular party which is basically looking at actually taking the legislation into Parliament. So what I recommend, and this is for everyone in every country, Catherine Albrecht from from antichips.com and from Spy Chips, we work quite closely, and I have, you know, very good words to say about Catherine. She's been excellent in the sense that the work that she has done has provided the backbone to movements, you know, like ourselves. And she has basically, you know, written a bill, which is basically the bodily integrity bill, that the average person, all they need to do is download the bill off the actual website, and we have it on ours as well, and all you need to do is find out the Minister of Communication, which is in your country, and what you do is this. You basically find the people that are in power, you contact the Minister of Communication, and then you contact the opposition Minister of Communication as well at the same time. While you're doing that, you basically find out the policy advisor of the person in power, so the actual government that is in power, you get the policy advisor's name, and you send the same letter to the actual minister, and you send it to the policy advisor. You then duplicate that to the actual opposition. So you send one letter to the opposing minister, one letter to the actual policy advisor, and then you look for independence. Independence can basically hold the control or the balance of power within a Senate or, you know, the Congress or whatever, and you basically do exactly the same thing. So what I recommend to people, it is a case of, look, we have nothing to lose. The work is there. The framework is there. The document is there. Just get off your ass and let's basically – let's make that preemptive strike. Let's, at the end of the day, you know, like even with myself, James, you know, when I speak to, you know, people in government, they have got no clue. They really are totally, they can't, they're compartmentalized. They basically understand their particular area, you know, whatever field they're basically in. But quite often when I have spoken to them and I'll say, look, you know, microchipping technology exists, you then have to actually step through and basically go, look, it's FDA approved, this is the patent number, this is the seed funding. And quite often you're greeted with, oh my God, I didn't actually know that this technology existed. So what we need to understand is quite often, you know, and people in who are awake or understand what is actually happening, you're in that, you know, 0.1%, especially if you can see the whole picture. And when you can see the whole picture, a lot of responsibility comes on you. It's at the end of the day, you have to go out and do something with it. I mean, you can have all the knowledge in your head, and with no action, we'll have no results. It's plain and simple. I'm starting to sound like Anthony Robbins, but it's true.
But it is very true, and it's a message that people need to hear and take to heart. So tell us a little bit about the Bodily Integrity Bill and what it actually contains.
Yeah, what the Bodily Integrity Act is, it is really just building a firewall, in a sense, where governments, let's say if they introduce the bill, you're basically saying, look, the human being has inalienable human rights. He basically cannot be coerced or forced by his government or by his employee to be microchipped under any situation. And what it does, by having a bill that's in, let's say, in law, hypothetically speaking, let's say there is another 9/11 attack, or, you know, whether you want to call it a false flag or whatever occurs, if the bill is actually signed into legislation and then the government has to actually meet, you know, within Congress or Parliament and says, look, we need to basically microchip the populace to actually, you know, ensure that their identities, you know, the person who says who they are is who they are, the average populace would go, hang on, we're now overturning a bill so you can basically have your way. So that is where debate obviously occurs, and that is where people basically rise up and say, look, this isn't right. If there is no bill in place, if there is no firewall in place, we all know how governments operate. They just steamroll forward, and their agendas are generally, a met, because the one puppet argues with another puppet within the government and says, okay, look, we'll just argue about this within, you know, the parliamentary debate, and, you know, you can abuse me here, I'll abuse you here, and then what we'll do, we'll disagree, and we'll make some amendments to the bill, but the bill always passes. And that's what we'll see with Obamacare. So what will basically happen with that health bill is, you know, the Democrats will argue with the Republicans, and the Republicans will argue with the Democrats. They'll make some amendments to the bill, and they'll go, oh, the American populace has won. You know, today's a victorious day, and long live the Constitution. Meanwhile, they have raped the Constitution. They have raped the American public. They've taken away their, you know, their civil liberties, but they're lying all the way to the bank. So anyway, if any of the people that are, you know, sponsoring our bill, I don't mean it about you anyway.
Right. Well,
sorry, James.
I was just going to say, it is important to have those legal precedents in place so that it does cause at least pause for thought when suddenly the government in power wants to overturn it. And as you say, the precedents are either set and therefore adhered to, or they are left to be decided by the people who are already making the rules. And I think we know how that goes, as you said. So it's definitely an important part of this process to head it off at the pass. And I think that sounds to me like what the movement is really about, is trying to raise awareness before this becomes the major issue that we both know it's going to be.
Exactly. And look, I have a word of hope as well. You know, government at the end of the day is inherently, you know, moving at the pace that the world bankers wanted to move. But in my real world experience, you still have good people within government. You can still find, you know, people that represent family values. You know, they might, you know, support the carbon emissions tax, for example, but not everyone within government is evil. So I think what people need to realize is, rather than saying, look, these people are the enemy, what we need to do is basically, you know, it is a marketing campaign. We really have to go out and say, look, you know, human rights are something that are worth, it's worth fighting for. It is worth fighting for to ensure that, you know, your body does not have a microchip in it, regardless of the situation. And how that has to be done, it has to be done tactfully. It has to be done with a bit of respect. And at the same time, it's all about education. So what we do need to realize as well is, quite often we have to work with government to get these actual laws, you know, passed. So that's my message, is we don't go out there and say, you know, all governments are evil. I mean, the World Bank is evil, but, you know, people within government, you will find good independents. You will find, you know, people in opposition. And what we also need to realize as well is, quite often the opposition party that is in is always looking for an angle. They're always looking for a bill to introduce that will give them the edge. And I can tell you this, if we manage, like in Australia, we're doing quite well right now, where, you know, this year it will all play itself out to the point where, you know, if the bill is basically introduced, it is very hard to sign or you know, vote down a bill that basically says we want preventative microchipping. We really are at a critical point right now where it's actually good. The timing is excellent, because right now there hasn't been a 9/11 for quite some time, you know, regardless. So right now there is a window of opportunity. If hypothetically there is another nuclear attack or, you know, things along those lines, the window of opportunity obviously shrinks, doors close, and people in government basically get more paranoid, and, you know, bills such as the ones that we obviously want to introduce then start sounding as though they're conspiracy, you know, it's of from the conspiracy camp, basically, James.
Well, there you go. That's exactly right. It costs no political capital at the moment to really resist the microchipping agenda, because there really is there's no pressing stampeding of the herd at the moment in terms of a major terrorist incident. Well, that's a very astute point. And also, you bring up the specter of the carbon tax. And to my mind, that it seems to me that carbon rationing, like it's been proposed in the UK and by various ministers in governments around the world, is something that's not going to take place without the type of RFID-based cashless society that we're talking about here. Because, of course, there needs to be a way to monitor everyone's purchases so that people can have their purchases checked against their carbon rations. So ultimately, I think that type of system is not going to take place without this type of technology. So that's another example, I think, for people to think about. Well, there's another point that I wanted to bring up tonight, and I don't think there's an easy way to transition to it, so I'll just abruptly transition to it. And it sort of relates, I guess, to the idea of carbon taxes and that sort of thing. We, of course, recently saw the ClimateGate scandal, and we also saw Copenhagen and the hype that was surrounding that. And something that I've been thinking about recently is what this scandal and the fallout from it tell us about society in general, but specifically how society is being oriented towards scientific authority. And I think, of course, in terms of the oft-heard argument that we've been subjected to so much lately, that if the thousands of scientists of the IPCC believe that the world is warming because of carbon dioxide emissions, then it must be true, and anyone who is not a scientist cannot argue otherwise. Now, this is something that I guess we've been being indoctrinated into for a long time, and of course it goes much, much beyond merely climate science. But that's, I think, probably the one issue that I think everyone will be able to easily bring to mind at the moment. But this is an issue that I think touches on this idea of the scientific control grid that we're always discussing, because of course it's founded on people's inherent trust in technology, in the people who are promoting technology, and in the authorities to regulate that technology for the common good. And I think there are a number of ways to pick apart all of that. But just putting that out there on the table as a subject to discuss, what would you like to say on that topic?
Well, I have a very strong position on this. I mean, look, the way I see it, you know, science has basically, scientists have become the new gods. But for me, when I actually look at, you know, and I did science at school, what science is actually meant to do, it's meant to actually observe facts. So it's meant to be impartial. It is basically meant to, you know, analyze the facts, and then regardless of, you know, what the facts say, we then have the basic conclusion. But in this world that we basically are living in, where scientists are obviously funded, given seed funding, working in universities, and obviously want to, you know, keep their actual grants moving along, quite often, you know, the data or the facts that they're meant to be observing, if they observe the wrong fact, well, that has to be changed, because the grant money needs to be keep coming in. So what I can say, I mean, and this is from my perspective, is science has basically replaced, you know, morality. From my perspective, it has basically replaced, you know, values and ethics. And it's got to a point where, like you said, unless I am, you know, another scientist from the same field, you know, from, you know, studying climatology and the like, well, what can Greg Nicoletis basically offer when I haven't graduated from Harvard? And, you know, how can I argue with a god, basically? So it goes back to what you mentioned with, you know, the peer-reviewed articles. And, you know, we saw what happened with ClimateGate. They're basically fudging data. And the reason they're fudging data is because the facts, as they see, have to line up in a certain way for the agenda to move forward, for the grants to keep continuing. So, you know, for me, I see science as just really, you know, from my perspective, I have absolutely no faith in science whatsoever. And the reason I have no faith in science is not to say that you don't have good scientists out there, but everyone would agree, the scientists are basically are given seed funding, whether it's from multinational companies, banking empires, elite groups, venture capitalist groups that basically have certain agendas. But the major thing that annoys me, James, and this is purely, you know, myself speaking, is whenever science basically wants to go out, and let's say, for example, you know, they're promoting transgenics, where they say, okay, look, we basically want to mix, you know, a man with a bear and a pig, you know, and for people that have seen the South Park episode, and that will create, you know, a new species. The question then becomes, you know, where to from there? Why do these people have the actual right to basically go and do it? And the answer is they do it because they can do it, because the way they actually view us, we are basically just viewed as livestock. I'm not intelligent. I don't have I haven't graduated from Harvard with a doctorate. So, you know, what does my opinion mean?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that is confused here is a problem in part with our language, because we use science, the term science, to refer to a number of things. But I think fundamentally we've lost sight of the fact that science at base is really nothing more than a way of coming to an understanding about the physical properties of the world. It's not even that understanding itself. It's just a method for finding out about the physical properties of the world. And unfortunately, I think there's that role of science as a process of coming to an understanding of certain physical laws has been conflated in the public mind, and probably certainly helped by some of the agencies and authorities that want to posit themselves as scientific authorities. That role has become conflated with the idea of, I guess, the policymakers who are then making decisions based on those technologies or the implementation of those technologies. So just because, as you say, just because we can cross a man with a bear with a pig does not mean that we should or that there's any need to. That's something that happens at the human level and must be decided by society. But when we simply put blind faith in the scientific community to decide which way the technology will go and how it should be implemented, that's when we start running into real problems, I think. And to me, it's almost a problem with our definition of science and what its role is in our society.
And look, what you bring up, I totally echo. I mean, when you look at science and you know, the way I was taught science at school is we are observing the facts from an objective perspective at the end of the day, right? So it's not from a subjective perspective, it's from an objective perspective. But everyone would agree science basically has no moral reflection anymore. There's not that it ever had, but it's now got to a point where, you know, and anyone, you know, that basically, you know, you can go onto Science Daily or sci.com and all the science journals, you will see on a daily basis, you know, technology and experiments that are occurring that just make you cringe, that you think to yourself, where is the safety net? Who has actually thought this through? How do these scientists basically think that we're going to fix society by them basically ticking a box and saying, look, I managed to move this atom to this position and I now have the record? So, it's for me, I've always found, you know, scientists to be just strange. I mean, they've lost the art of what science really is about. It's a case of they really worship money, because money gives the grants, and the grants basically, you know, and people can look at this. You have the Cordis projects in the EU. Whenever a grant is actually issued to a science body, the grant basically is always guided towards what the outcome needs to be. So quite often, you know, in a biometric grant, you will find that they will want to, let's say, ensure that they can monitor, you know, someone's gait at twilight hour, which is extremely hard to do, with moving shadows at a distance of 300 meters. So hypothetically, let's say that's what the grant basically was given for. So what you'll find is you will basically have science that start not observing the facts. You'll have scientists that will, whether they're fudging data, but what they're really doing is they are just basically building the puzzle with the cubes that they've been given so they can ensure that their next grant is basically given. So I just look at them as, you know, high-paid hookers, basically.
Well, that's a very important point, because just as in every other aspect of life, if you follow the money, you start to see where the real power in that system lies. And of course, it's with the people who are giving the money for certain researchers to pursue certain lines of inquiry and starving other researchers of funds when they're pursuing the wrong line of inquiry. So that's why, of yes. course, the people who are the man-made climate change believers will always try to point to the denial machine that they talk about, the oil companies funding all
the
of these.
The flat earthers.
Exactly.
We're flat earthers.
Exactly. But of course, they'll never, ever talk about all of the billions upon billions of dollars that are being spent around the globe by governments and other institutions to research climate change and its effect on ground squirrel populations and whatever, the mating habits of goats. I don't know. Whatever it is, it's all
exactly.
related to climate change. Because climate change in any research proposal will get more grant funding than something that does not have that angle on it in the biological sciences at any rate. So there's already an inbuilt bias towards pursuing something along that line of thinking. And that's just one example of how society can be led in that way. And that brings us back, I guess, specifically more to things like Verichip in thinking about the high technological various technologies that have been developed over the last 100 years, and the vast majority of that has ultimately stemmed from the military and military purposes.
Exactly.
So obviously we are being led as a society in a certain way, and it is through the money and the funding of that scientific process and system.
And look, what you bring up is exactly the case. I mean, you have companies right now that are guiding this world, and it is no conspiracy theory. All you need to do is basically follow the money trails, look at the grants, look at the deals, and have a look at how government legislation will generally benefit the multinational corporate companies. So quite often, you know, and Obamacare can basically be researched by the average user out there. Have a look at how much of the Obamacare, you know, earmarked money is basically going into the large tech giants, whether it's, you know, Verichip, IBM, you name it. So the point is that the money, and, you know, when's the last time the government sent you $1,000? Like, let's be serious. I mean, here in Australia, I would have paid to even use the roads, you know. So isn't it funny how the government will hand out, you know, the coffers of the people's money? And the money never ends up in the people's hands. It ends up basically in the corporation's hands. So going back round side as well, James, I guess for me as well, going, you know, back to the science element, the only time that I see science basically clinging to, you know, values and ethics and, you know, whether you call it faith and hope, is whenever they're proposing a product that basically – you know, like, I don't know, I'll give you an example. You know, Intel was looking at they're discussing, it's called B2B, which is brain-to-brain machine interface. So we're now talking about, you know, brains communicating on an almost telepathic level. All you basically need is, you know, chip implants and a wireless network. Now, to bring that product into market, what do we need to do? We basically need to promote morals and ethics. So what do we have to say is, oh, we will help the people that are in wheelchairs. We will help the people that are basically, you know, locked into their world of, you know, autism. So the only time I actually see science basically taking the moral high ground is when they're promoting their agenda. So just like, you know, you say with climate change, it's to save the world. It's got nothing to do with a carbon tax, of course. It has nothing to do with global governance, of course. It's got nothing to do with centralized power. It has to do with protecting the world. So, I don't know. the whole thing sickens me sometimes.
Well, that's right, and I think an important thing for people who are in that scientism camp and believe blindly in the power of science to overcome all, I guess something to keep in mind is the way that science will be the first thing thrown out if it ever gets in the way of making money. And I think of things where, for example, we have these proposals for technologies for homeland security and screening at airports, where we'll have scanners that will somehow, through your brain waves, be able to detect terrorist intentions.
Yeah.
And of course, we know that this is going to be the utmost quackery. It's going to be just completely unreliable, but that won't matter as long as occasionally it gives a indication of terrorist activity and everyone sees, oh, that person got taken aside from screening. Oh, those scanners must be working. And that's all it will require, and there will be no independent verification of its utility or its accuracy, and nor will there need to be. So there just has to be the gloss of pseudoscientific sort of the gloss to make it seem like there's some sort of science behind it.
And what you bring up, James, I mean, it's the DOD and DARPA is basically it's called a lie, no lie intent to the system. So hypothetically, let's say I'm moving through, I've landed in LAX, I'm going through, let's say I will go through the naked scanner, which I won't. And then you have one of those machines that hypothetically is covertly scanning my brain. And DARPA and, the Department of Defense have gone on record to say, and people can research this, they are happy with a 10 to 20% failure rate. So, hell, it's close enough. So...
yeah.
So look, like you said, this is absolute quackery, but the point is, who will stand up? Like, I mean, I actually have a goatee, so I'm obviously a terrorist. So hypothetically, let's say I go through the system and I'm one of those 20% that has got, supposedly intent to harm the system, and I don't know how I can, harm the military-industrial complex, but then... if one viewed me and said, oh, look, he's from Greek descent, he looks like a terrorist, he must be a terrorist, who will come and defend those people? Who will actually stand up and say, look, I think this is quackery?
Exactly. Or will everyone be kowtowed? Exactly. Everyone will be kowtowed and think, oh, well, as long as I don't speak up, perhaps I can slip through. And that's
exactly. I have an 80%, chance of slipping through customs.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's how they turn people against each other in this sort of competition to who will be allowed to pass through and who will be randomly flagged. And it's a very, very bleak future. But we're moving into the last few minutes of our conversation, and I'd like to end on a positive note that people can join in to help affect change. So tell people once again about the website. Tell them about the current campaigns you have going on, current videos, and future campaigns about Verichip and Is Not Positive.
Yeah, we're releasing, actually, we're doing something completely different. We'll actually be releasing a preview of, a review of the preview of the movie Avatar. So we're hoping that goes viral. I haven't actually seen the movie, but we could actually generate an entire video just off the preview. So, it's very much, I mean, the director is very much in the know, and there's a lot of symbology in there, and, so we hope to have that out tomorrow. We'll soon also have a campaign, obviously, against IBM, and obviously One Mainframe to Rule Them All, which is part two, and then we're also doing a bit of an infomercial on the naked scanners as well, so... yeah, we have a fair bit. I guess what we're trying to do, James, is we're trying to take the message deliver it either with humor or, just different avenues, because, quite often when people do see this information, that they do shut down. And what my recommendation is spend 90% on the solution, take action, rather than just... festering in the fear, the paralyzation of, what are we going to do? We're all going to die. And, I speak to a lot of people that are in that position because, they do read, whether it's the truth sites and the like. And quite often there is no, take action. And I'm very much, when you actually do take action, you know, there's a case of there's something in you that basically says, well, you know, I'm doing all I can. I'm doing all I can, and what more can one do? And when you get to that point, you know, you'll sleep better at night anyway.
I agree wholeheartedly with that assessment. So I know you're too bashful to bring it up, but obviously you have a lot on your plate, and obviously it takes a lot of funds and a lot of funding to do that. So if people wanted to support you and what the work you're doing, is there any way that they can make a donation?
Yeah, what we do is we have what's called 100% funneling of all donations to banners or to advertising. So all we basically do is to keep it so we can actually show that we are a moral and ethical organization. If, for example, people want to purchase a banner for us on a particular site, please do it that way. I mean, obviously you can contribute, and you know, I'll tell you where the money is actually being spent. It's a case of you know, I don't want to be like the corporate churches out there.
Absolutely. Well, if you can't be them, then be something different. All right.
Exactly.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Well, it's always great to talk to you, and always good to get the updates about what's going on. So, Greg, thank you once again, and I hope people will check out WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped.com.
Much appreciated. Thanks, James. All the best, mate.